listen to this.
You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS.
We have an interview today with Julian Ickham. We're going to speak about the Kitchener Tent City that was going on, the safe injection site operations that were happening, as well as the poisoning crisis of drugs, particularly fentanyl, being put into drugs. And we're going to speak about all that today here on AWOL Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And Julian, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here. Wish I was in the studio, but yeah, it's all good to be on Sound FM again.
Yeah, it's been a few months, perhaps, since we've seen you here in studio. And so I'm very happy you can have the time today to speak about this. And I know there's a lot to talk about, so let's just get right to it. Earlier in the summer, a tent city started. Why don't we start right at the beginning? Why did a tent city operation get launched this summer? Who put this together, and how did it go, or how is it going?
How is it going is a good question. So before we started the tent city, we did several consultations about what the problems in the downtown community are and what is needed. And two of the main issues that came up was the housing crisis and the drug crisis. So out of these consultations, we put forward a proposal to the region, got some people on board, and we used the tent city as a way of pushing leverage. Our proposal deals with all the aspects of the drug problem. And what we're asking for is, first of all, to house everyone from the tent city, which is going on right now. And the second thing is to give us two buildings where we can run in one building, harm reduction, safe injection site, and programs specifically geared towards users. And then another building, which would be a dry building, which would have political programming. You'll have OWODSP caseworkers. It'll have, like, guitar lessons, punk shows, that sort of thing. Like, the main thing is in the past, when we've had drug users and non-drug users in the same building, the people who've been trying to get off of drugs have been, like, there have been issues. So
right.
We consulted with people, we got volunteers, we put a proposal together, and we launched our tent city. 2 days into our tent city, we were dealing with a lot of people leaving the tent city and overdosing on all sorts of drugs. I saw with my own eyes someone take, and so at that point in time, we decided to turn the tent city into a safe injection site. Well, overdose prevention team is the way we phrase it, and basically it was like people at the tent city were trained in naloxone and were armed with naloxone and were dealing with people who were ODing, and it was kind of scary, like, at points in time, because we're not just talking about people going and shooting up and ODing. I saw someone smoke weed and go down. Like, there was fentanyl in the weed. They came back from the naloxone, so that was kind of scary. The other thing was we had a very, very close call. A young woman took a ecstasy tablet, and I guess she tried to walk it off or something. You know, like, if you've ever drank too much, you're like, fuck, I'll just walk it off. And she went in her tent, and someone asked for her, and, like, I saw her leave, so I thought she was gone. And someone else was like, I think she's in one of the tents. So I went to the tent, and I saw that she was ODing. Like, if that person wouldn't have come looking, she would have been dead. So we gave her naloxone, and she came back. There have been bodies being found every day in the different shelters, including Mary's Place, House of Friendship, and other places. And we think it's important that if people are going to use, whether you tell them to use or not to use, people are going to use some sort of substance. And most of these substances now have fentanyl in them. And I think that until the city creates a safe injection site and has drug testing kits where people can come and test their drugs and know what they're using, there needs to be a safe place for people to use drugs without dying.
Has there been?
Who I was talking to who OD'd on what the weed was laced with, she was an opiate user. So she told me that after the first puff, she was like, okay, there's opiates in this, cool. And then the second puff, she just blacked out after the second puff. And the scary thing is that fentanyl is 100 times stronger than morphine. You're finding fentanyl in Percocet pills. You're finding which is 5 milligrams of oxycodone. Someone who's taking a Percocet pill clearly would not have the tolerance for that. Someone who's taking an ecstasy tablet or smoking a joint probably never been exposed to opiates before. And, like, you know, in the past there are all these urban myths about people putting addictive drugs and weed and whatever. This isn't what the problem is, right? Like, you wouldn't put, if you wanted to get someone addicted, you wouldn't put one of the strongest fucking opioids in a bag of weed. Like, you wouldn't put, you know, that where the person is probably going to die. You're going to put something much, much milder. So, like, my opinion is that the same way that meth replaced cocaine, and somewhere at the top people decided to flood the streets with meth and all of this, fentanyl is going to replace heroin, and until it does, and until people get used to it, a lot of people are going to die, and it's going to find its way in many, many substances. And I honestly can't see, like, some dime bag dealer being like, I'm going to put this drug that costs $80 in a $10 dime bag and sell it for $10 because I have so much money. You know, like, clearly this is something done at much higher levels. And I'd like to point out that the opioid crisis has been, like, the fentanyl crisis has been going on since 2009, even earlier. Right. And, like, I'm sure you can find, like, an old blog of mine that I wrote in 2011 talking about the same problem. And at that point in time, the argument I made is that the only people who have access to this, like, I had a fentanyl patch before for pain. So the patch has your name on it and a barcode, like the actual patch, your address and everything. So if you sell it and someone dies, they know who to charge.
Right.
So in 2009, the only people, like, there was no talk of China producing this and all this xenophobia. There was just, like, somehow fentanyl's getting into the drugs. We don't know how. And my thesis at the time, and I still stick by this, is that someone in the level of production, at the pharmaceutical level, in cooperation with the police, was allowing it to get out and allowing it to get into the drugs and allowing it to get into the community. And now that, you know, it's affecting middle-class people, now that, you know, it's affecting many different strata of society, now it's an issue. You know, in 2009, 2010, right, 2011, it was, like, just poor junkies. Reality is that we had no option. Like, in the past, we've said no drugs at Tent City. Well, if we tell people to go in the bush and they die, that's kind of on us. And so we felt we had no option but to fucking train a bunch of people in naloxone training and do what we can to stop people from dying.
So what is the region doing in response specifically to the fentanyl crisis and the and this poisoning? Is there, like, is regional health in on this? Is there talk of an official safe injection site or something that can be you know, that nurses will be at you know, like they have a model for safe injection sites?
Yeah, the idea with the region is there are two trains of thought. One is that the region is trying to go through it the legal way, and that's supposed to take several years. The other train of thought is that, like, they'll just, you know, we finish up, like, we're in discussions with the region around our proposal. The region likes what they see. We just need to hammer out some of the budget, some of the what's needed and that sort of thing. And the sense I'm getting is that they'll give us the buildings and we deal with it and we deal with the fallout and the legal ramifications and all of that. And we're actually really, really cool with that because, like, we can't wait all these years for something to happen. At this point in time, despite the fact that we're in discussions with the region and despite the fact that we're in discussions with different forces to start this program and actually, like, have a place with not just volunteers but actually trained people, despite all of this, the police is, like, we decided to disperse the tent city into many different tent cities due to some of the flack that the region was getting from us having it into the at Victoria Park. And so the police have been using this as a way of harassing us. So just like last year's tent city, the region says one thing and the police do whatever they want. They've confiscated several tents, and the argument they've used was there have been drugs in the tent. Well, it's a safe injection site. What do you think people are injecting, like aloe vera? Of course there's drugs in the tent. The reality is that they've just been hunting people down, taking people's tents, trying to arrest people, and in some cases successfully arresting people. And recently we had several of the people who've donated tents go to both the police as well as City Hall and bylaw, and none of them have any records of tents being taken, even though there's so many witnesses. Like, do you know where Victoria Park? You go beyond the tracks, you have the buildings. There's this little area. From the buildings, you can see this area.
Right.
When the police raid happened on September 1st at 8 a.m., people from the buildings were all watching. People have pictures of the police raid that were in the process of getting. Like, they're trying to tell a whole community this didn't happen. And people are like, what the fuck? We all know this happened. So again, it just shows, like, the same thing like last year when Brian Larkin must have gotten all drunk and stuff and went on Twitter running his mouth. Like, it's the same sort of thing. The police are acting as rogue agents. They don't care if people live or die. They don't care that bodies are being found every day in shelters. They just want to clamp down and deal with it as a law and order issue. Well, it's, first of all, it's not a law and order issue. Second of all, it's a little too late to come heavy-fisted and save the day. Like, all they're doing is driving people deeper and deeper into hiding and forcing people to die where they're not found. We're looking for more tents. We're always in need of naloxone. We've been meeting people in different drop-off areas. Police have been following people around, trying to find out where the different tent city sites are. And if this continues, we'll have no choice but to go and set it up at City Hall.
Let's take a quick break. How do people get more information about what's going on with Tent City and with the work you do? I know you have your website.
Yeah, there's my blog, www.julianickham.wordpress.com. Also, you can email jichim32@gmail.com, or you can Facebook me, Julian Theodore Ickham.
Perfect. Let's jump to a quick song, and we'll come back speaking with Julian Ickham, speaking about Tent City in Kitchener, the opioid crisis, fentanyl crisis, and we're going to speak about housing as well, and more here on AWOL Radio. And this is Victory Lap from Propagandhi.
Are you there? chromatic whistle of a carousel calliope. Stomp the citizens of our clouded idiot dingbat society. Stomp.
AWOL Radio here. That was Propagandhi with Victory Lap off their album Victory Lap, which is out next week. Woohoo! This is AWOL Radio. It is September 22nd, 4:32 in the afternoon here in Waterloo Region, broadcasting out of our Beamer Box Factory on Bright Up Street. And this is Radio Waterloo. Dan Keller studio with you with Julian Ickham on the line. We are speaking about the ongoing actions of Tent City, of the, you didn't call it the harm reduction team. What did you call
overdose
that,
Julian? Overdose prevention team.
The overdose prevention team, and some of the regional responses. We'll get into some of the housing issues around Tent City and what's been going on there, but why don't we get into a little bit more about the actual, like, the poisoning. The cops, you mentioned the cops are treating this as a law and order issue. Are they going after the people that are poisoning the drugs?
I think the answer is quite clearly no. If they were going after the people that were poisoning the drugs, there would be big trials, there would be media, and that sort of thing. The people they're going after is users, and that's the people they're trying to criminalize. And the reason they're going after users right now is because we're bringing it to light and we're bringing it in the eyes of the media that this is a crisis that can't wait, you know, that needs to be solved. And at this point in time, it's quite obvious the police don't care about human lives. It's obvious that they would rather have people die and not bring the issue. And it's in their interest not to bust the people who are doing this.
Why do you say that? Who is it? Who's doing this?
Fentanyl isn't something that someone can just, you know, make at home in a bathtub. Fentanyl is a serious opioid, and it's been around way before, you know, people started pointing their fingers at China, Russia, and our typical enemies. The only people that have access to this level of powdered fentanyl to be able to, like, act willy-nilly in this are people in the higher-ups in the pharmaceutical industry, and the only way they'd be able to get away with it is to have the cooperation at some point, at some level, of the state agents turning a blind eye. So it's not in their interest because they're probably getting paid off or they're getting orders from their higher-ups to turn a blind eye to this, and it's not in their interest because, as we all know, the police is an instrument of state repression against poor people, and if poor people are dropping like flies, you know, that's fine. In the past, the police have used, and the state have used, other drugs as a method of population control and to crush resistance, particularly crack cocaine in poor black neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2009-2010, there was a whole ring of RCMP officers busted for distributing very high-level China white in regular heroin to kill off junkies. We think this is like, you know, they're just one-upping their game. Who can afford it? Who can afford to put $60 to $100 worth of a drug in a $10 dime bag to kill off their customers? It doesn't make business sense at all, and if anything, drug dealers are about making money. You don't make money if you kill off your people. And what we're seeing is low-level drug dealers are being handed bad batches, and they're just trying to get rid of it as quick as possible, and they don't want it to come back on them. They're not the ones putting the drugs in it. They can't afford to do that. Like, drugs cost money. Powerful drugs cost lots of money. Drug dealers aren't going to operate at a 90% loss and also lose their customer base. It's just not good business sense. So it's clearly someone else at a higher level doing it who has access to the fentanyl. People in the pharmaceutical industry how would it get from point A to point B through the distribution without, you know, being noticed? It needs a state blessing at some level.
I was going to bring it into a discussion in terms of the state release of drugs, the state distribution of drugs. You know, we're looking at the legalization or the quasi-legalization of marijuana.
Quasi-legalization of marijuana is not going to solve the drug problem. As people know, I'm with the 32CSM International Department. The 32CSM policy on drugs is quite clear. We want the Portuguese model to be implemented. We want drugs to be dealt with as a social issue. We want drugs taken out of the hands of antisocial elements, and, you know, people shouldn't have to be forced into hiding, and they should be able to seek the help they need if that's what they want. If not, they should be able to live a normal life and not be afraid of dying when they're trying to get their next hit. Like, all the criminality that comes from drugs comes from the fact that drugs are illegal, comes from the fact that, you know, you have this false scarcity because of the illegality of drugs, and, you know, people, cops have jobs, they get to go crack down on poor people, whether they like you, whether you're a drug user or not, they can just call you a drug user or a drug dealer and ruin your life. Jails are full of addicts who are the victims of this drug crisis, probation officers. Like, there's a whole industry around criminalizing people through the use of drugs. And, like, the reality of the situation is people don't wake up and say, I want to be a junkie. People use drugs to either medicate for pain or to medicate for trauma. Some people occasionally use for enjoyment. Those are not the people who are, you know, the addicts. The addicts are the people who are using drugs to cope with serious issues, whether those be physical or mental, and throwing them in jail is not going to solve anything.
You do have an event coming up talking about some of, like, drugs as a social issue, dealing with it as a social issue.
We have two events, actually, one on the 28th and one on the 29th. One of them is a report back from Ireland. They're both at the KPL at noon. And the other is we're going to have a report back from the tent city, put forward our proposal, and we're going to announce the date of a reconvergence of all the different tent cities at City Hall for the overdose prevention team to openly administer naloxone there and create a safe place where people can use, because it's quite clear that the police are not acting in good faith. The police are acting as rogue agents, and, like, people getting arrested for coming to a drop-off point or getting, you know, monitored and whatever, eventually someone's going to die. Eventually we're not going to be able to distribute the naloxone if this continues, so we'll have no choice but to bring all the 10 cities back together, probably at City Hall. We're going to talk about what the issues are. We're going to present our proposal and let people know how they can get involved. So, the 28th and the 29th at noon at the KPL.
Yeah, and for more, there's a Facebook event on that. Check out Report on the Work of the Overdose Prevention Team and Moving Forward, and search Julian Ickham for that as well on Facebook, and find it that way. Now, one of the other issues, obviously, that Tent City is dealing with is the housing issue and homelessness in Waterloo Region. I've seen some releases from your webpage talking about, you know, victories, about getting off waiting lists and into housing. You want to talk a little bit about that? Talk about how, you know, the process of this kind of action into results.
Basically, the way that the housing system is set up right now is it's based on the idea that if we make things too difficult for you, you won't apply, or if you do apply, that things will happen, and then, you know, be put on a list, and, like, the idea is to make people not apply. So what we've been doing is we've been doing clinics where we've been signing people housing and working with the housing people to get people into housing, and that's been very, very successful. This year, I would say about two-thirds of people using the tent city have so far gotten into housing. And we're continuously signing up other people for housing. We're at the soup kitchen. We're at Ray of Hope. We go there once in a while. If you see one of us sitting down at a table, you need to get on the housing list, come sit down, chat with us. We'd advocate on your behalf, and we'll push for you to get into housing. Like, 'cause the reality of the situation is, just like the drug crisis, the housing crisis is a fake scarcity, as a false scarcity crisis. There's enough resources to house everyone. Housing should be a human right. If you don't have a roof over your head, what do you have? And it's something we need to, like, push for.
Well, the region was making pledges, you know, over the past half decade. I forget what their numbers were, but they were, you know, it seemed to be pretty impressive numbers that they were looking to house. Have they been meeting those? Like, it's obviously, it doesn't sound like it's adequate.
No, like, I think the waiting list is 2 to 5 years. So for every person who gets into housing, you know, there's thousands of people that have to wait. And this is because even though there is, like, in theory, a Housing First program, the only time the Housing First program actually works is when people push for it. It shows that, like, collectively we are strong, but, like, you know, individually they can, like, screw us over. There's enough abandoned buildings, there's enough people, there's enough resources. If we took even, I forget what the number is, but I think it's like 10% of the military budget, we could get rid of homelessness. If we got rid of all our military budget, like, there would be no homelessness. And, like, honestly, who's attacking Canada? No one's attacking Canada. We're going and attacking other people. And these wars we're fighting, they don't benefit the regular Joe Blow living here. I don't know. Maybe you got some secret oil money from, like, Afghanistan or some, like, secret morphine money, but I never got none of that money. Why the fuck should our budget go to fight a war that doesn't even benefit us?
No, all my money comes from George Soros, but... No, it's a really good point. There, we could end homelessness very easily with a small shifting of a budget towards the people, away from war, away from the fossil fuel industry, away from imperialism, towards the people that are residents here. I absolutely agree. I mean, what was it in Ireland? They were looking to force all empty lots or all empty apartments into the housing market?
Yeah. And that's because of, like, the huge grassroots movement in Ireland. Like, when they tried to impose a water tax, like, 2-3 years ago, you know, everyone got on the streets and was like, no, and the IMF and all these people that say that we owe them money, even though we don't see any of these money, were forced to back down. And this sort of movement continued on the issue of housing, particularly with the Save Moore Street and the liberation of the Apollo and all those different programs. So, like, it just goes to show that, like, a government won't do something for housing unless it's pushed. And when it's pushed, it's quite easy for them to solve the problem. So first we have to push the government to give us housing, then we got to show everyone how irrelevant the government is and just run shit ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely, on that point. Now, obviously, there's a link between our, the first topic today, the opioid, the fentanyl poisoning crisis, and housing and homelessness.
It's, being homeless is really, really fucked up. People say, you know, homeless people don't work. Every day of being homeless is work. You wake up, you have to find out where you're going to eat. You have to find out, you know, where you're going to stay that night. You probably have to defend whatever meager resources you have. It's really, really traumatizing. And it's very common knowledge that the receptors in the brain that block physical pain and that cause physical pain are also responsible for emotional pain. And so it makes sense, you know, being exposed to the level of violence on the streets, being exposed to the daily grind and not being able to get by, always trying and threatening to keep your head on water, that you want to take a break and, you know, somehow escape reality for however long you can do that. The other thing is that if you're homeless and you're a drug user, you're automatically criminalized. Like, let's be honest, a lot of students use drugs. You know, there's drugs all over the campus. There's drugs on every strata of the society. The difference is, if you're poor, you can't go check into a private rehab. You don't have those levels of support, and, you know, you don't have your own place to use. You're, like, trying to find some place to use, forcing you in a dangerous situation or forcing you in a situation where you're more likely to get arrested and brutalized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, to deal with, like, the opioid crisis, we have to go to the root of why are people using drugs? Why are people trying to escape reality? And, like, unless you go to the root of the problem, you're just treating the symptom. But the symptom at this point in time is quite severe, and so it's really important that the city give us a safe injection site.
Are there any politicians that are working on this that people can, you know, either talk to and
right now we're having a phone jam. I think we're using the mayor's office because the mayor is on the region, and we're asking people to write emails or send a phone call to the mayor. If you go at www.julianickham.wordpress.com, all the information is there. And after our public meeting, we'll be announcing the deadline for things to go positively, or else we'll have to regroup and maybe just set up shop on City Hall property.
Mayor Barry Verbanovic, Kitchener City Hall, 200 King Street West, second floor, Kitchener, Ontario. Phone number 519-741-2300. Fax 519-741-2800. And email is mayor, M-A-Y-O-R, at kitchener.ca. And again, you can find that information up on julianickham.wordpress.com. Is there anybody else? I guess the phone jam of the mayor is a pretty good. Have any of the politicians or anybody working in the region been really supportive of the work that you are doing?
Yes, but I don't want to name them. Like, we're having discussions with the region. The reason we're having discussions is because people are like, this is a good idea. And it's not just the region. There's people in the John Howard Society and other social agencies that are supportive. And actually, a lot of the social agencies are egging us on. They're like, you guys can do this. We can't do this. You have to do it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope at some point it will become that we can do this. Because unless they just want to give you the budget.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be better, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much for joining us today, Julian. Anything else before you take off today?
Just come over to our public meeting. There's two Facebook events, the 28th and the 29th at noon at the KPL.
All right, I'll give details on that. Thank you so much for being here.
Okay, thank you.
We were speaking with Julian Ickham, julianickham.wordpress.com. Check out the event September 28th, report on the work of the overdose prevention team and moving forward. We will be hearing reports back from our overdose prevention team who have been working at Tent City to distribute naloxone and save lives. We will discuss the need for a permanent safe injection site and what community members can do to support this work. It's at the KPL at noon on the 28th. So again, check it out. Check out julianickham.wordpress.com. There is the phone-in for Mayor Barry Verbanovic, who is, of course, also a regional representative in the regional government, to insist on dealing with these issues, with the housing crisis, with the homelessness in Waterloo Region, in a good way, in a positive way, not in a way that drives out people who have spent their entire lives in this region. We brought that up in the discussion. In Ireland, they're going to force all housing, all available housing, into this housing market. It's not an issue about quantity, it's an issue about capitalism. It's an issue about the housing market and the ridiculousness of the housing market and the prices of housing in Waterloo Region. Again, call Mayor Barry Verbanovic, 519-741-2300, mayor@kitchener.ca, to email julianickham.wordpress.com. And this is AWOL Radio for the 22nd of September, 2017. Thank you for listening. Check out grandrivermc.ca for our archives and radiowaterloo.ca. Peace.